Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 19. Riker opened his eyes and realized he had fallen asleep in the large, overstuffed chair behind his desk. Again, the room was silent, and except for the large plasma screen to his right, with a high-resolution image of Squaw Peak across the early morning city of Phoenix, there was no light. He changed the program to manual because, automatically switching from this to a GIF file of the Pacific Ocean from the cliffs of San Francisco sometimes jolted his train of thought. Oh, yeah. Where was I? He asked himself with a dry voice. He coughed on purpose, and the mild soreness at the back of his throat said he probably snored in the chair. He reached for his coffee cup, peeked at the dregs, and almost drank from it. I gotta stretch my legs, he said to himself, as he switched the plasma screen to a wispy view of Everest against the dark blue sky of early evening. He took a deep breath and stood up from his chair and watched his stocking feet across the large office, the hall, and into the kitchen area of the bunker. It was designed to take care of a full staff working around the clock more than 1,000 feet under Raven Rock Mountain. Recent budget indiscretions had upgraded it to perfection. The espresso machine used deionized water, making the coffee rich and absent of any chemicals that might be leaking into the aquifer from a possible contaminated surface. He rinsed his old cup in the dish sanitizer and placed it into the rack of the countertop dishwasher. It was designed to make steam and conserve water while sterilizing everything inside it. The machine dispensed his choice of the best Colombian bean automatically ground for a single serving to the perfect distance from the top of the small cup. Good morning, Mr. President, came Hadid's voice from behind him. Oh, Hadid, good morning. What time is it anyway? Asked Riker. It is 3:30, sir, said Hadid, clearing the sleep from his left eye with his index finger. Shit. I don't know whether to go to bed or keep working. Living underground has trashed my body clock, said Riker, clearing his throat before taking a sip of the concentrated coffee. Lorraine isn't scheduled to be here for another 5 hours, but if you need a backboard, I am willing to listen, said Hadid. I know you are. Smith wants Kyle and his lab team to go to the surface for testing. We need to know what Semyaza's got planned. I mean, they're going to attack us. But when? What do they hope to accomplish? Asked Riker, finally letting his voice go to normal volume. Would you like me to get Smith down here? Asked Hadid. And Jones, too. Those guys are two sides of the same coin. Can you do that? Asked Riker sheepishly. It shall be done, Mr. President, said Hadid without moving. You have something else? Asked Riker, noticing Hadid wasn't his normal instant self. Sir, our order has existed since the first kings of Earth. It is our calling to serve in complete allegiance, not using our knowledge of things to come to alter things in any way. But it is clear that we are stepping between alternate timelines. The scripture I read to you is only part of it. We are experiencing multiple memories of the same period with different outcomes. Someone is using conscious intention to change the past. They're trying to find a solution through this gathering. I fear that they may have found a way, said Hadid. Can one person do that? Asked Riker. Not on this world. There are rules, Mr. President. They're like the laws of the universe, the violation of which will cause the whole thing to collapse back into the singularity from which it was observed, said Hadid. Okay, you lost me there. How can the whole universe collapse? I thought it took tens of billions of years to get to this point from the Big Bang, said Riker, taking another sip from his espresso. Energy travels at the speed of light. At that speed, distance collapses to zero. Scientists call it infinity. You know, the equation? mass goes to infinity when it reaches the speed of light. Actually, the universe is still the singularity. Remember? Asked Hadid. Yeah, I remember Lorraine sort of explaining that over my head a while back, said Riker. Well, the I am moment created perspective by performing a mathematical function called the square root. You know what that is? Asked Hadid, trying to lead Riker through the thought. Yeah, it's like 2 is the square root of 4, 3 of 9. I got it, said Riker. This is how spirits divide. Not halves, square roots. Well, two spirits only creates perspective, like a line in space. So one of the spirits did the function again. This created 4 lights and allowed the 3-dimensional universe to be formed. The original spirit that did not divide again is the creator. The second spirit that divided once is the Christ. And the next operation is Lucifer and Adam. Lucifer was immensely glorious, and Adam was muted and slow to anger. So it is said that the worlds were given to Adam's line to be born in the flesh. Lucifer's has forever believed it should have been his line to take the flesh and progress through mortalities to be like the Creator. Hence the wars, said Hadid, letting his voice trail off. Okay, I see that. I finally get it. Now this planet is making its transition. It's being born again after going through its mortality, just like us. I got that part. And this is going on here and there all over the universe in some form or another. And Lucifer is trying to reclaim what he feels is rightfully his, by force if necessary. Right? Asked Riker. Well, that's where the rules come in. Victims are redeemed. It's only the ones who choose wickedness who were taken by Lucifer. He's like the district attorney of the universe, said Hadid. Oh, I see. And Jesus is the defense attorney, asked Riker. Exactly, said Hadid. And God is the judge, said Riker. Not exactly. He made the rules. We are the judge, said Hadid. Bullshit. I mean, we're not supposed to judge, said Riker. We're not supposed to judge others, but our thoughts and our actions, by our own choice, judge us as a real-time state, said Hadid. You mean one moment we're saved and the next moment we're not? Asked Riker, setting down his empty espresso cup on the counter. That is exactly the way the rules are written, sir, said Hadid. What about the church? I mean, what about pastors and the Pope and, holy crap, no pun intended, what about the whole system of worship and prayer? Asked Riker, pulling his hands through his hair, wiping the confusion from his scalp. All churches are fabrications of Samyaza. He knows man is seeking for answers, and so he provides them in every flavor but the right one, the one inside of each of us, said Hadid. Actually, I can see that. It's nothing if not confusion and misdirection out there, and sooner or later, you just follow the money, and wham, there you are, said Riker, popping his fist into his palm. I can get Smith and Jones now, Mr. President? Asked Hadid. Yeah. Tell them to be prepared to stay a while. When Lorraine gets here, we'll know what to do. Shelley's going to have her work cut out for her tonight. Also, is there any way you can get Abdullah on the phone? I think it's about time we kick this up a notch, said Riker. It shall be done, Mr. President, said Hadid, moving swiftly out of the kitchen and down the hall toward the elevator. This would be best done directly from the communications center on the 5th floor. While you're out, I'm going to take a shower. It's one of my favorite things about this suite, said Riker. Hadid was well down the hall, and he wasn't sure if he even heard him. He walked into the presidential suite and shut the door. The closet was larger than the bedroom he had in his last house. He stripped down and separated his clothes into the proper bins for laundry. The bathroom was mostly made from polished natural green granite from the mountain itself. The shower was large and equipped with 5 shower nozzles designed to apply a hydro massage to the body while standing up, and the water temperature could be controlled digitally to repeat the experience from one day to the next. The nozzles were brightly lit with LEDs with selectable wavelengths to stimulate the chakras as needed. It was invigorating, especially when the stereo system inside the shower was turned up. Today, he would need it all. The elevator was swift and quiet as Hadid rolled his shoulders inside his dark suit jacket. He flexed his hands and rehearsed in his mind what he wanted to say so he could finish as quickly as possible. He didn't like leaving Riker alone, even if he was in the safest place on the planet. It was the idea that he was not at his place of duty for which he accused himself. The doors opened, and he stepped forward into the hallway and into the communications center lobby. He remembered the firefight they had encountered many months before. He glanced over to the large support column and noticed the notches left by the hundreds of rounds of 9mm rounds fired by both sides. He walked into the communications room and up to the officer on watch. The chair in front of the microphone was empty, and the Air Force captain in a short-sleeved blue shirt was sliding manila envelopes into sleeves in a top drawer of one of the filing cabinets. "Good morning, Captain," said Hadid. "Good morning, sir. What brings you our way on third shift?" asked the captain. "I need to use a secure line and make some local calls on the encrypted system," said Hadid. "Use that blue phone right there. Press #77 and wait for the beep. You'll get an outside line. But it's only encrypted one way. Local encrypted calls are encrypted both ways by pressing #91 and then the extension number. We only use 4 digits down here, even though there are more than 2,200 phone lines." "Do you need me to secure the area?" asked the captain. "If you don't mind," said Hadid with his hand resting on the blue phone. "Yes, sir," said the captain, as he closed the file drawer and traded salutes with him as he exited the room and closed the door. The maglocks applied, giving Hadid the communications room by himself. He dialed the number for Abdullah Bayazet and waited for the line to answer. "Mr. President," answered the deep voice on the other end. "No, sir. This is Agent Yafil al-Hadid on the President's detail," he answered in perfect Arabic. "Yes, the Iron Bar. Excuse me for my voice. I have no eyes," said Abdullah. "Yes, sir. I apologize for calling so early in the morning. The President would like to discuss the global broadcast with you at 0600. Will you be able to do that?" asked Hadid. "I can be presentable in an hour. Yes, Agent Hadid, that will be fine," said Abdullah. "Masalama," said Hadid. "Masalama," said Abdullah, and the line went silent. He held down the receiver and picked up the phone again, dialing #91 and then Jones's extension. It rang once. "Jones," answered the voice on the phone crisply. "Hadid, do you ever sleep?" he asked. "I was asleep," said Jones. "While standing up and fully dressed?" said Hadid lightly. "I'm not standing up." "What's up?" asked Agent Jones. "The President would like you and Smith to meet with him at 0730, said Hadid. "Roger that. I'll get him. We'll be there," said Jones. "Until then," said Hadid. The martial arts master enjoyed keeping others off balance, especially with sudden endings to conversations. Jones characteristically hung up the phone without saying another word. Hadid half-smiled and shook his head as he placed the receiver back on the cradle. He pressed the red button, unlocking the magnetic locks to the doors leading into the hallway. He opened the doors and let them stick to the magnets holding them open. The captain was standing outside as if he was guarding the doors. "Thank you, Captain. Keep up the good work," said Hadid, saluting him back. "Any time, Agent," said the captain, walking back into the communications room. Hadid returned to the elevator and rode it down to the vault deep below the complex. The doors opened, and he could hear the music playing far down the hallway. Led Zeppelin, he said to himself, while the doors closed behind him. He walked to the kitchen, where the lights were on brightly. He could smell some sort of pastry cooking in the small countertop oven. Riker was dancing quietly with his back to the door as he walked in. "Good choice, sir," said Hadid from the doorway. "Hadid, would you like a strudel?" asked Riker. "Don't mind if I do, Mr. President," said Hadid, grabbing a white cup from the cabinet rack and placing it under the single-cup coffee brewer. He dropped the Jamaican module into the lid and closed it, hitting the start button with his thumb. Within seconds, the steaming water began trickling through the prepackaged blend and into the white cup. "Not bad for a bachelor's pad, wouldn't you say?" asked Riker. "Except we're not bachelors. We're just men who are alone," said Hadid. "Too true. Still, it's a cool man cave," said Riker with cheer in his voice over the mildly audible song. "Been a long time since I rock and rolled." "The key word being cave, sir," said Hadid, faking a dance with his fists in front of him and smiling lightly. "More like a hole. But we're snug as a bug down here, eh?" said Riker. "I made the calls, Mr. President. Smith and Jones at 0730 and Abdullah at 0900, said Hadid. "Good. I want Lorraine here when I speak to him," said Riker, pulling the two strudels from the oven and spreading the icing over them. He slid one of them off the plate onto a smaller plate and handed it to Hadid. "Thank you, sir," said Hadid. The two men ate their blackberry strudels and sipped their coffee while standing in the kitchen. "Damn, it's still only 4:30, said Riker. "Take a nap," said Hadid. "I think I will lie down for a while. One cup makes me very sleepy sometimes anyway," said Riker. "I got this," said Hadid, wiping his hand in front of him, indicating the crumbs and wrappers left on the counter. "Really?" "I'll be ready to go in 2 hours," said Riker, yawning finally. "You go. I won't let you oversleep. Relax, Mr. President. You never know. It might be the last time you get to do so for a while," said Hadid. "Let the dog out, will you?" said Riker, smiling as he shuffled in his gray slippers toward the kitchen door. "Sure thing, sir," he said, pulling the dish towel from the loop on the front of the counter. He noticed the music turned down and then off. He knew dreams were waking his president more often now. He could feel the timelines crossing and recrossing as the events consciously created by several awake and aware groups around the world converged on these times. Like stepping on blocks of ice to get across a choppy channel, they would have to find the right path to the future. "We don't get much time to think, and we don't get second chances. Soon, the choices would have deadly consequences."